This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Hello, everybody, and welcome again to Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martorano. We hope you can join us on this day before the day before. I think I may have you in a captive audience kind of position because I am certain that you're out running around or stuck in traffic trying to get in or out of a mall to get everything that needs to get done in these last few days before Christmas lands on us like an anvil from the sky. This is Recovery Radio, sponsored each and every week by Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. And as is so often the case, we rely upon them for some real sharp insights and professional techniques and topics that will help us better understand the disease of addiction. That's what the show is about. It's also about, obviously, the road to recovery. We know a lot about the grip of this disease right now. We know a lot about opioids and the epidemic that swept across the country. What is less well known, I think, is that millions and millions of people, in spite of those grim facts, managed to get sober and live successful and happy lives. We want to constantly remind you of that here on Recovery Radio. It is the season. It's the season to be jolly, which is fine, you know. We all buy into that on some level. It can be particularly difficult for people in recovery. Or I shouldn't say particularly difficult, but uniquely difficult or uniquely different. These are special circumstances for people who, let's face it, already have their hands full. So we're going to get a deep dive on sobriety, relapse prevention during the holiday season. To that end, we've invited a frequent contributor to the program, Amanda Kimball, to the program. Amanda is the clinical supervisor here at Retreat, and she's brought her elf with her for the second year in a row, Chris Hecker. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Chris is the transportation manager here at the Retreat, and he is my neighbor. My studio is next to his office, and they are like church mice. When they see me in the building, that pain in the neck is recording next door. We got to be quiet. This is my first opportunity, Chris, to thank you for you guys always being tiptoeing around here. Appreciate it.
No problem.
So, man, did I get it right? Is this a special time of the year for people in recovery?
This is a special time of the year, yes.
I want to take a look. I want to set this up in the context of beyond, look, you're going to go to parties and there's going to be beer and wine, so don't drink beer or wine. And take a broader look at this. With regard to what pressures are brought to bear for people. This is a very stressful time of the year, whether you are in recovery or not in recovery. It is stressful both in a positive way. Ooh, got to get the gifts wrapped, got to get to, you know, the parties and all of that. What am I going to wear? All of those holiday stresses that everybody shares. But there is also this notion of, not, I don't want to say forced, but the necessity to be in the holiday spirit. That whole context, that emotional context, is probably what makes this most specially a cautious time of the year for people in recovery. Is that true?
Sure. I think that for a lot of people, you know, maybe they just got out of rehab or they have several months sober. This is the first holiday that they've been sober in quite some time, or at least the first Christmas holiday that they've been sober in quite some time. So there's this notion that they should be happy. They need to be happy. And I think that has forced a lot of pressure on our people in early sobriety.
Is that something that in treatment you make a point of telling people? It's a good lesson for all of us. Look, feel the way you feel and acknowledge those feelings. Don't force yourself to feel some way.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people, like you said, have this feeling that they need to act like they're happy or that they're excited. And quite frankly, a lot of people in early sobriety are scared to go home for the first time. They're scared to be sober on this holiday because they haven't been in many years. And as a result, they wear this mask, as we call it in treatment, that makes them look like they're happy. They have a smile on their face. They're acting as though they're happy, but inside they're really not. And I think it's super important for them to acknowledge that they're not happy. It's okay to not be happy all the time. It's okay to be scared. And I think it's important for their supports to know that they are nervous to go home for the holidays.
Part of the – and Chris is in. Chris is 5 years sober now, and he has some great on the ground stories about what it's like to go back to family celebrations. I want to get to that in a second. But what you just described about wearing the mask and not acknowledging the way you feel, the entire season is constructed to do that to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it, the pressure, don't be Scrooge or you're miserable or why aren't you into this? Hiding your feelings and not being honest with them is part of what got people who are, suffering from the disease in trouble to begin with, right? Hiding the way you feel?
No, most definitely. And I think, too, with in early recovery, it's such a whirlwind of emotions anyways. Like, you might even not know how you feel. I know I didn't. And as I'm trying to process this stuff and figure it out, it's everything. It's all emotions. So to be able to, like, practice some things that we're learning and to be able to, like, just call someone and tell how you feel and using the tools that you learn in treatment help you to be able to just kind of – maybe not even necessarily like identify feelings, but just kind of get through a couple moments, get through a couple feelings because they all pass, and then just kind of deal with the next one as it comes.
Chris, in your experience, how I don't want to use the word helpful, but how conscious do you think your family and friends were of how, fragile a moment the holidays were for you the first time you had to confront staying sober and the holidays? Did they have any clue what to expect?
I think they had some clue, but at the same time, I think they were dealing with their own emotions. I know, as a lot of us did, my addiction caused a lot of damage. And when I went back into the family environment for the first time, literally that's what it was Thanksgiving Day. And I was only a few months clean, and it was a pretty rough experience for me as far as emotions went. As my family came in, we got there to my father's house, as we always do. My wife at the time picked me up with my children, and I was not well received at all. They were angry, they were hurt, and they were scared, and it was definitely a pretty eye-opening experience, because I know sometimes, like, now that I'm clean, I think everything should be okay. And, like, they got their own feelings to deal with, too.
Sure. Why aren't we all thankful here on Thanksgiving? Mm-hmm. I'm getting sober. And they're on the other side of the turkey going, really? What right do you have to come in here and act like this is a party after what we've been through? I guess there was at least one or two holiday gatherings that you wrecked or made worse, or –
I was there, but I wasn't present a lot of the time. And, just everybody kind of knew what was going on with me. And it was just, it made everyone uncomfortable.
Amanda, in preparing both people in recovery and their families for these holidays, is it important that people, for instance, families that are going to Al-Anon or any of those other family support groups, start talking about what to expect?
Absolutely. I think it's very positive to have a realistic conversation with your loved one in early sobriety as to what the expectations are from you, as a family member. And I think it's important for the person in recovery to discuss what they expect from the family members, only because everybody needs to be on the same page. And I think it's, like Chris said, there's a lot of fears from the family as well, because the person in, with the substance abuse issue has caused a lot of damage. Mm-hmm. But the family members, too, are hurt and they're fearful, probably as much as the person that's recovering, wouldn't you say, Chris?
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah. How long did that first Thanksgiving gathering after treatment did you last at the gathering?
It was about 15 minutes at the gathering.
Is that right?
Yeah, most definitely.
They asked you to leave, or did you?
I kind of took the hint. It was quite obvious I wasn't welcome there yet. They weren't ready to receive me yet.
Yes.
So I was in a halfway house, so I went back to the halfway house. Probably 15, 20 minutes I was there.
Oh, my, that's horrible. How many of us have walked into a room and felt out of, that first moment where you feel like I'm out of place here, mm-hmm. and you really felt it? Turned around and walked out. Did anyone try to stop you?
No, they did not. They were kind of...
I'm laughing at this. It's just horrible. It's a horrible story.
They were, I think they loved me, so they were happy to see me.
But there was just too much water over the dam, huh?
At that point, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, that was 5 years ago, correct?
It was, yeah, 2012.
What was the next gathering Did you try Christmas that year, or was that out of the question?
It was out of the question. I didn't even bother going to Christmas. I was able to see my kids for a while, and that was about it. I didn't go for any family dinner or anything like that. We just kind of left it alone. The oldest saying, like, leave sleeping dogs lie. That's what I kind of did, and let them have their time to process things, too.
How did you manage your emotions during that? Were you resentful of them for them pushing you away, hurt? What were you feeling?
It was tough to decide at first, but I was definitely some resentful, probably a wide range of emotions. You know, I was hurt, but at the same time, like, I knew what I caused. I knew there was a lot of damage within my immediate family and then my extended family. So it was just a matter of kind of dealing with the feelings as they come up, using the tools and support that I had, and, you know, basically learning to practice recovery in early recovery.
That's a very telling point, Amanda. Chris goes into a situation like that. He's trying, very fragile, though. They shun him. Mm-hmm. For his ability, or anyone's ability, to both feel hurt, but cognizant of why they feel that way.
Sure.
Is important, correct?
Absolutely. I think it's important to realize the damage that you've caused and that these consequences are a direct result of your addiction.
They're not just being mean to me.
No.
I messed up and they're collateral damage.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's hard though. It is hard because you're looking for, you know, any kind of helping hand, and there's your family and they're just like, please, we want to have a meal and, you know, not have the crazy person in the room. Listen. I can't imagine. I frankly can't imagine. This time of the year is not difficult for me because, Lord knows, I don't have to do anything but show up and eat. But I'm overwhelmed at times, and we all are, by the pervasive nature of this goodwill and cheer. We're talking about relapse prevention during the holidays with our guest in the studio, clinical supervisor Amanda Kimball, and Chris Hecker, who's transportation coordinator manager here at Retreat. Stay with us. We're going to get deeply into some techniques, support systems, and continue looking at the emotions involved that underline this whole topic. This is Recovery Radio. Don't go away. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Steve Bartorano with you. Hope you found us by now. We are here on Saturdays talking about the disease of addiction and the road to recovery. Holiday season, particularly dicey time of the year for people in recovery. We're talking about relapse prevention in that context with Amanda Kimball. Amanda is the clinical supervisor. She's a frequent contributor to the program. We're always pleased to see Amanda. She's brought with her Chris Hecker, who this is your second year in a row for you two talking about this topic.
Yep.
So that's great. Chris is a transportation manager. Amanda wants to make this a tradition. I'm all for that. So we're glad to have both of you here. We're going to get back into the discussion of coping mechanisms, techniques, having a plan, everything for people who are trying to manage their sobriety during this time of the year. Tell us a little, Amanda, about what goes on with people who are in treatment, residential treatment. I guess an outpatient too. What's it like for somebody in a residential program during the holidays?
I can speak to our facility, our inpatient facilities at Retreat. We realize that it's a very difficult time of year for our patients to be inpatient. They're away from their families, they're battling their disease, they're possibly even detoxing at that time. So it can be very difficult in general, let alone around the holidays. So we try and make it extra special for them. We have a nice meal for them. Our chef cooks up a very nice meal with our culinary staff. We do special activities, and we also make sure that they do get gifts on Christmas morning because, once again, we realize it's a difficult time to be in treatment, but a lot of people, it's a life or death situation, and they need to be in treatment in order to stay alive.
Does that include keeping them from seeing their – not keeping them, but minimizing their contact with their family? Does that go on?
We have supervised family sessions that go on in our inpatient facility, and we also allow phone calls and things of that nature. But a lot of times we need everything to be scheduled and planned so that the facility can run accordingly and to make sure that our patients are safe. They might not be in a good headspace. They might try and leave if their families come visit them on Christmas. So we make sure that they can speak with their families, but, you know, that they remain where they need to be in order to battle their addiction.
And some people need to be away from home. They need to be, I mean, miles away from home, correct?
Absolutely. We have our outpatient facility here in Lancaster that we're closed Christmas Day, but we're open the rest of the week. And we like to make it special for them, too, because some people don't go home for the holidays. Maybe they just got out of inpatient treatment, or they don't have a safe place that they can go home to because their family is in active addiction, too. So we like to do a nice brunch for them. We do a hot breakfast. We serve the patients. And we like to do activities that can get them into the holiday spirit, so to speak.
You can't ignore it.
No, you can't.
Yeah. But it's not the same as being home and sober, right. I guess. With regard to people in outpatient therapy, when you send them out the door that day before, are they armed with what they need?
Yes, they are. So, for instance, tomorrow, even though we will be doing something special for them, the day before, around the holidays, we often get them armed with what they need in order to cope with their disease. So, for instance, we'll have a process group in which we speak with them about what they need to do in order to stay sober. If they are going home, what's their plan? Do they know where they can go to a meeting? Do they know who they can call? We like to get them set up to have, you know, the best possible scenario, but also prepare them for the worst at the same time.
Chris, how many times were you in treatment?
A total of eight times throughout my life.
Eight times, both inpatient and outpatient, or all residential treatment?
I've been in both, both types of treatment.
So you've had plenty of occasions to be out on the street during the holiday season. Did you have a go-to person that you would call? What sort of plan did you have?
The plan I always tried to make up whenever I was going was the biggest thing was to have an exit plan. Somebody that could come take me out of the situation. And at the time of my first Thanksgiving, you know, I was with my wife at the time, so she just took me right back to the house.
You mean someone who understands? It doesn't have to be someone who's also in recovery, but just someone who's sensitive to the situation. Here's Chris, first time in a family situation, trying to stay sober. I've got to be a little tuned into what's going on. Someone like that?
Absolutely. It definitely helps to be able to have someone that just at least was willing to be like, I need to go and to come get you and take you home.
Because the person in recovery, I'm guessing, in that context, the context of the holiday and the party and everything, is not in the best position to make the determination about what to do there, right?
Definitely not.
I guess one party would go, I'm going to power through this. I'm going to make it happen. And that's not necessarily the way to go, right?
No, definitely not. Like we talked about a little bit before, being in touch with how you're feeling and kind of recognizing situations and also having support to call, because we might not recognize when it's time to go. But sometimes it's good to let other people do our thinking for us.
So you were really, as difficult as that first Thanksgiving was, where you lasted 15 minutes, you made that an independent decision by yourself, and it couldn't have been easy getting up and saying, I got to leave.
It definitely wasn't. And when I got home, when I got back to the recovery house, like, I was able to reach out to support, utilize the other guys at the house to kind of process through all those feelings. But, it definitely, it helps to have somebody that we can talk to kind of sort things out, because the emotions are so crazy and everything's in a rough space right then.
Was there any point during which you considered using again during that period of time between leaving the Thanksgiving dinner and getting to the halfway house? Was there any point?
Honestly, not at that point. No, I kind of wanted to just escape the situation, but I knew at the time, using wasn't the answer for that. I just needed to be out of there and be back in a safe environment, which the recovery house was, and kind of let my family do their thing and enjoy their time too. You know, I don't need to be there to be a stressor for them as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Lord knows I've wanted to walk out of a whole lot of family gatherings, and nobody would have stopped me either, Chris, now that I think about it. When we come back on the other side, Amanda, let's talk about, because this is all anecdotal, but with regard to really preparing someone in recovery to remain sober during the holidays, we're talking about a plan.
Yes.
And you alluded to it, but when we come back, we'll talk about, you know, how specific that plan has to be. This is Recovery Radio. Don't go away. We're back on Recovery Radio. I hope you've gotten out of the parking lot at whatever mall you're struggling your way through here in the waning hours of the pre-holiday season. I'm Steve Martorano. We're here. We're on Saturdays. We talk about the disease of addiction. I know you've read a whole lot about it. It is finally now bubbled up into the mainstream consciousness, unfortunately, because we've been ravaged by an opioid epidemic in this country. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, that story is being fairly well told. It's affected millions and millions of people across every kind of economic and racial and social strata you can think of. So this is a big deal. What is less understood is that there are ways out of this. It may not seem like it at the time, but there are. So I'm going to give you the phone number for retreat. And I give you the phone number, and I tell you this every week. I hope you never have to use it. But the disease of addiction never seems to announce itself. It arrives out of nowhere. People have come into this program time and time again and said, I never saw it coming, never knew it was going to happen. And they're forced under those circumstances to make extraordinary decisions with no information, no support. It's just a terrible time. Here's the phone number for retreat. They have world-class facilities. They have expert clinicians. They can help a lot of people. But I don't give you the phone number because I think this is the only place you can go. And certainly the people at retreat have said time and time again, Steve, we're here to answer their questions. That's why you give them the phone number. So, again, I hope you never have to use it, but it can really be an important factor, someone to turn to if you have any questions or comments about this disease. 855-859-8808. That'll put you in touch with Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. Somebody there will answer your questions. They will. 855-859-8808. From Retreat, Amanda Kimball is with us again. Amanda and her elf, her Christmas elf, Chris Hecker, transportation manager. They're with us each year at this time to talk about relapse prevention during the holiday season. I told you guys before we came on the air that one of my favorite cynical comments about this time of the year is I heard somebody once say, well, Christmas has us by the throat again. And it's really the truth. You can't regular folks without any problems can't stumble into Christmas. You can see it coming a mile away in this culture. It's like a freight train. Mm-hmm. And you can act like it's not rolling towards you, but it's going to run you over. So you got to get ready for this thing, no matter who you are and no matter what circumstance you find yourself in. Christmas, I love it when people talk about a war on Christmas. If there's a real war on Christmas, Christmas is winning.
Yes,
right?
It is.
Christmas is not losing this war. So you got to get ready for Christmas no matter what, particularly true of people in recovery.
Yes.
When we talk about having a plan, how specific a plan are we talking about?
I think it's good to have a very specific plan. I tell all of our patients here in outpatient, I want pretty much everything planned out. I tell them, if you're going home for the holidays, you need to know who you're going to be around. You need to know who you're going to call if you get stuck and you need to talk to somebody. You need to know where meetings are in your hometown and what times they are, because AA and NA run all day. Like I said earlier, addiction doesn't take off. And I think it's very important for people to know where they can go to meetings and get help. And then lastly, I always say plan your escape route. You need to know where you can go and who is going to get you there if you are in a bad situation that you need to leave, such as people drinking at a holiday party. Maybe you get into a fight with your family and you need to go. You need to make sure that you can get to your supports quickly.
Chris, did you have the occasion to come up with a plan?
Oh, most definitely. I knew I kind of figured it was going to be a little rough that first holiday, but I definitely had support to call. I had a ride out, which I utilized. And, you know, when I got home back to the house, I was just able to, you know, start working, processing some of those feelings and utilizing the tools that I learned in treatment.
Yeah. What about cravings during this time of the year? Chris, did your cravings go up or down, or they fluctuated all during this time of during the holidays?
There was definitely some cravings involved. It kind of came up more so not from being around people that were drinking or something like that. But it was more just kind of dealing with the feelings of, you know, early recovery and then add in the stress of the holidays. So, but I utilized the tools, you know, made those phone calls, talked to different people. For me, it was kind of like, I can't hold that stuff in. I need to speak about it, because once I hold it in, then, you know, I start to think about it more. And the more I think about it, the closer I am to getting to acting on it.
Was there anybody in the family that you could lean on a little more, at least in the initial stages, or what, were they all the same sort of problem for you initially?
Probably all of them were definitely angry, you know. Yeah. And I was able to reach out and have some conversations and stuff. With the first Thanksgiving was the first time that I actually saw them, like, physically in a couple months. And I think that was a little got a little overwhelming for all of us. But I was able to reach out. And I know my one sister actually texted me shortly after I left. And she said, she said something like, "We love you." Like, just something simple like that. That was, you know, just encouraging, you know, like, even though that was bad, like, even though we hurt our families, they still love us, and they still want what's best for us, and they want us to be a part of the family.
Yeah, that's a, it's easy to imagine what they're feeling. They're feeling regret, anger, of course, regret that you left, relief, now we can have our dinner, but it's still, he's part of this family.
Definitely. And I think, too, with, you know, even after I left, you know, I wasn't, I'm sure they were some relieved, but, you know, they were still sad I wasn't there,
Well, yeah, it's a reminder of the problem.
Yeah.
It's just that he's not here, and we know why he's not here. Amanda, you mentioned office parties, the context. It's difficult to get back to work anyway in this circumstance. How important is it in the work context during the holiday season to be open with your colleagues that you're in recovery?
I think it's important for colleagues to know if you are in recovery, because you go to Christmas parties, holiday parties, like you said, and there's a lot of drinking at holiday parties. People are going to offer you alcohol wherever you go, whether it's holiday office parties or even family parties. Sometimes families don't know that you're in recovery, extended family, cousins, aunts, uncles, because there's that level of shame in telling them. So I think it's important to just say, "I'm not drinking." If you don't feel comfortable saying, "I'm in recovery," you can just say, I'm not drinking," or "I don't drink." And if people ask you why, you really don't owe them an explanation. But I think it's okay if you feel comfortable saying, "I'm in recovery, I don't drink anymore." That's totally acceptable.
This is completely my experience, but I wonder whether you guys agree or disagree. But I find it, first of all, utterly common for people to say, "No thanks." And I don't see anybody wondering about it. Do you know what I mean? People just, "He's not drinking."
I think that's lessened over the years. That's a conversation that we have with a lot of our patients, where they are working and they have holiday parties, or they're going home and grandma doesn't know they're in recovery, and maybe they used to have a couple drinks in previous years. And a lot of people just say, "I don't drink." And I think that a lot of people don't ask why not as much anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know that they don't ask that for fear that they're prying, "Well, he may be in recovery," or they just accept that not everyone drinks.
I think, too, that I think as far as a recovering person, like, we kind of overemphasize that, because I've had experiences at different parties and things where it's just like, "No thanks," and then there's no other word mentioned of it.
Right. Right. And have you had the occasion where, again, because it's the holiday, where somebody doesn't go, "Oh, come on, have a little eggnog," you know?
Yeah, that kind of stuff happens from time to time, and I just – I was always like, you know, "I'm driving, I'm not going to drink," you know.
Well, that's the thing. The other thing is that everybody understands the problems with DUI now.
Sure.
The tolerance is zero. So when someone at a party goes, "No thanks," you know, unless you're a complete knucklehead, you got to respect what that's about. That's about, you know, not getting arrested for one thing. Some of the things to be particularly careful about in a party context, whether it's at work or in families, and like both of you to speak to this, Chris, you got to be careful when somebody says, "Let me get you something."
Definitely,
you got to know what you're getting, right?
Definitely, absolutely. You know, sometimes people do toasts and things like that coming up on New Year's, and I've done toasts where it's like they have sparkling cider. I make sure that if I'm going to an event like that, where I can still participate, but I keep myself safe.
Yeah. Incidentally, it might be instructive to define our terms here for a second. In this context, in a holiday context, we talk about relapse in general. If someone has a drink at a party, even inadvertently, right? You didn't know it was hard cider. Does that constitute a relapse?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I think it depends on who you ask. most of the time, I think that people do know what they're drinking. And if you're cognizant of not wanting to relapse, you're going to ask what's in it. So for me, in my clinical perspective, I don't take that excuse, oh, I didn't know what was in it. You did once you took a sip. So it depends on whether or not you decided to drink the whole drink.
And continue drinking.
Exactly. Or you realized it and you put it down. Because relapse isn't just about the physical ingestion or, you know, however you're getting your drugs into your body. It's about that mental piece too. Mm-hmm.
Particularly that mental piece, because that inadvertent slip that doesn't lead to anything immediately might embolden somebody to go, well, look at that. I can drink socially. You, Chris, for instance, you have no doubt that you're not a social drinker. You could never be a social drinker, correct?
There is no way I will ever be a social drinker.
No way.
Most definitely not. I've never drank for a taste. I drank for effect every time. And, you know, just my recovery is my responsibility. So I need to ask what are you handing me? What's in that punch, you know, and things like that.
Amanda, in your experience as a clinician, have you had people who are in early recovery who look at the holiday seasons as an opportunity to find out whether they can become social drinkers? Or do most of these people go, nah, I got to go in there and I got to power through here?
Of course, there are people that use the, you know, that excuse, oh, well, I'll find out. But I don't think they even need the holidays to test out whether or not they think that they can socially drink and not continue to drink alcoholically or use their drug of choice. So some people use it as an excuse, but I think overall, you don't need an excuse to test it out, Chris, right?
No, definitely not. It was, if I was going to use, I used.
Right.
Yeah, you weren't trying to test the waters. You just want to jump back in.
Definitely. Yeah, there was no testing the waters.
What's an important point to get to? The goal is not to have a drink in your hand. The goal is not to drink. Or the goal is not to use drugs.
Sure.
Relapse prevention during the holiday, the topic, appropriately enough, here on Recovery Radio. So don't go away. And we're back with our guests from Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Center's clinical supervisor, Amanda Kimball, and Chris Hecker, who is transportation manager here. But let's just a moment before we get into the final segment here on relapse prevention. I tell people this all the time when they say, what's the most important point along the line of treatment, which is not one thing but a continuum of things. It's a process. And I say, well, there's a lot of points along the way that are critical. I said, but I could tell you something. I know a bunch of guys whose job it is to pick you up, in a car, mm-hmm. pick you up. I said, I'm telling you, that's got to be one of the most important moments, because I don't think it occurs to most people when they make the decision that I need to get someplace, how they're going to get there. So, you know, you guys are really, you do an amazing job. You must have some unbelievable stories about people in the back of your vehicle, right?
No, we definitely do. We're very grateful to go get them, though. Definitely.
The guy or the girl who's in that car driving your loved one or you to recovery not only has to be a safe driver, but they also have to know who's in the back seat and what they're going to say. They want you to stop. They want you to let me out. They one before we go in, right?
Oh, yeah. Any scenario you can think of, we've experienced.
Chris and his crew are right next door to the studio here, so I just wanted to give them all a shout-out for that. It's an amazing part of getting to treatment is actually getting there. So Amanda, let's focus on a couple of other things that trip people up during this time of the year. You mentioned briefly their denial. I said somebody goes to a party, I didn't know there was rum in the punch or something like that. How do you react to that as a clinician when somebody comes in and says, you know, I had a little bit of that, I didn't know. What was your feeling about that?
I have a tough time buying it. As Chris stated earlier, your recovery is your responsibility. It's important to know what it is that you're ingesting, whether it's a drink, you know, someone makes brownies with marijuana in them. It's important to know what it is that you're taking. It's your recovery. And if you're really determined to stay sober, you need to be asking those questions. Absolutely.
You know what it's a lot like as someone who we have grandchildren who have food allergies. Mm. So you can't be more diligent than keeping an eye on what's in food. And people in recovery have to be exactly the same way, because, in fact, what we are talking about is something like an allergy, correct?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, one drink, one anything can wind up leading to death. You know, that's as far as recovery goes, definitely.
Did you How difficult was it, or do you recall the process you underwent, Chris, of taking responsibility? Do you remember when you went, you know, I got to quit blaming everything else for what's going on here? Do you remember that process?
It definitely was a process that took a lot of time. I know when I first went into treatment again for that would have been the last time, like I was just hurting so bad. I just wanted the pain to stop hurting. You know, so like as I began my early recovery, utilizing the tools I learned in treatment, you know, I guess it just took some time, you know, where it was like, okay, I did some work, you know, I took responsibility for my recovery, seeing some benefits of it, then that made me want to keep going further.
A lot of people, Amanda, will say they take responsibility, but there's a deeper activity that needs to go on, right?
Sure.
Where you really do take responsibility for your behavior, and that, of course, becomes the greatest coping mechanism available. Mm-hmm. It's your responsibility to see what's being served. Mm-hmm. It's your responsibility to understand how other people are feeling, and to negotiate your way through a minefield like that. I mean, it is a minefield. It can be, particularly for people in early recovery. How does it get easier over the years, the holidays, when you're in recovery? You've been 5 years now sober. Is it easier now?
I would say it gets some easier, but also as you grow as a recovering person, the tools that you're learning and practicing to use, they get easier to use. You know, you're able to not delay making that phone call anymore, or you're able to make a decision like, I need to leave this place right now. It's just a matter of the tool. You kind of what's the right word? You're learning to use your tools that you have.
You know, it occurs to me that when you see somebody like Chris, who's successful now for 5 years, that part of the goal of treatment and recovery is to certainly accept that you have this disease chronically and it's with you, but to move past "I'm a recovering alcoholic or drug user," and to just say, "No, well, yeah, but this is also just the way I live."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that what we need to do here and focus on?
I do. I think that that's very important to just realize that this is your life now. And if you take that drink or you use that pill or that bag or whatever it is that's your drug of choice, you could die. Like Chris said, it's like an allergy. I think it's important to walk the walk and kind of practice what you preach too, because like you said earlier, taking responsibility for your recovery. As a clinician, I don't believe it until I see it. You can sit there and tell me anything, you know, everything that you think I want to hear, and I'm not believing any of it until I see you actually practicing it. And I've had the pleasure to know Chris for almost 4 years. So I've seen him kind of go along his journey. And when he talks to me, he says, you know, sometimes you just have to get through it minute by minute. And I think that's really important for our patients and everybody who is in recovery to know that it might seem like the end of the world right now, but the next, not even day, the next minute could be better. And that's what it's really important to focus on.
Well, all the cliches are true. I say this a lot. That's how they become cliches. And certainly with regard to sobriety, for anybody listening who've seen people like Chris, who relapsed several times, was in and out of recovery. Amanda, I, you're right. Actions speak louder than words. It's the oldest cliche in the world. And you're right. That's how you measure success.
Absolutely.
Somebody can come in and tell you they've been sober for 20 years. And you just, if you're wise about this, you can recognize that's great. Talk to me tomorrow.
Right.
When it's 20 years and one more day.
Yes.
But listen. Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy holidays.
You too. Thank you.
Living proof here. I've seen it many, many times. People get healthy. They get better. They live sober, successful, and happy lives. Now, Chris, you are wrapped in the bosom of your family on holidays, correct?
Oh, most definitely.
That's great. Amanda, always great to have you. Appreciate your time and
thank
expertise
you.
In this. Everybody, enjoy the holidays. And you know, we'll see you next week on Recovery Radio.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.